Don't be afraid of the dark. Just relax and let the darkness fall over you.
Welcome to Afraidish, a podcast where we take a deep dive into the history and paranormal while enjoying some tasty adult beverages. From ghost sightings to hauntings, urban legends and cryptids, let's get weird and afraid-ish together. Hi, I'm Paul.
And I'm Ashley.
And welcome to episode 21.
Holy moly.
Yes. So, we are back locally. We're going to talk about some local haunts in the area.
Yeah, I'm excited to be back in the local area, but I was thinking the other day, I think that we should at least do one episode, at least, in Louisiana coming up soon.
Yeah, we could do a whole series in Louisiana.
We could do a whole podcast on Louisiana.
That state, I want to go there and
visit. New Orleans just by itself.
That's insane. I want to visit there.
I do too.
That'd be a fun vacation.
That would be a really fun vacation. And I pseudo know someone who does ghost tours.
That would be awesome.
One of the podcasts that I listen to, she just got her license to be a tour guide because she's been doing them unofficially for so long that she was like, I might as well make this official and like do it right.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be fun.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Before we get into it, what are we drinking?
Well, we are drinking Sam's Club Member's Mark.
Yes, it is.
Strawberry. I almost said Maker's Mark. That's why. Member's Mark Strawberry Lemonade. It's their limited edition vodka for the summer.
Yeah.
It's very good. If you have a Sam's Club membership, go get some.
It's 30% alcohol.
I don't care about that. It's
and
tasty.
It's 60 proof. Yes, it's very good.
It's tasty. And some lemonade that I bought at Aldi.
Yeah.
It's a French lemonade. It's carbonated pink lemonade, basically. I bought it because of the bottle.
French sparkling pink lemonade.
Pink lemonade. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Very good.
It is very good.
Yes. All right. Instead of five fun facts about Springfield, Missouri, this is called, I'm naming this section, Historical Facts About Springfield, Missouri.
Because some of them aren't fun.
Well, yeah.
Yay.
Because, you know, history.
History was the worst.
Yeah. Still kind of is, so.
I forget who says that. There's a YouTuber that I watch that says that. History was the worst.
History.
Historical facts.
All right. In 1821, Missouri was officially recognized as a state. A group of settlers, including brothers John Polk and Madison Campbell, ventured to southwest Missouri in mid to late 1820s to prospect.
There's a Polk County.
Yep.
Isn't there a Madison County?
Yep. And named after them, yes.
Yes, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't sure about a Madison, so yeah. I knew Polk. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
That's fine. At the time, the area was inhabited by Kickapoo, Delaware, and Osage tribes, and you can guess where this is going.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Not funny, but...
No, you just... Sometimes you just can't help but laugh uncomfortably.
Yeah, that's... That's what, yeah. Two other brothers from Tennessee, John and William Fulbright, claimed 160 acres of land near Jones Spring in February 1830. William is credited with constructing the first cabin in what is now Springfield, located near the 1200 block of West College Street. The University Club placed a marker in the retaining wall on the south side of College Street in 1929 to commemorate this event. On March 4th, 1830, the Campbell brothers ramped near... Nope, not ramped.
Maybe you camped. Need to have another drink.
I need a drink, yeah.
How do you go ramping?
It's like camping, but on a ramp.
I was thinking, because there's like onions. It's like an onion. It's called ramps.
I don't know. The
harvesting ramps.
Anyway. They camped on a ramp. Nope. On March 4th, 1830, the Campbell brothers camped near a spring or... God damn, I can't talk tonight. I'm not drunk enough yet. They camped near a spring or natural well, and John P. Campbell carved his name into an ash tree nearby to claim the land around the spring for his farm.
Wow. This,
yeah.
I wish I knew it was that simple. I would have claimed so many houses by now.
No shit. This spot is now located near Founders Park.
Mm-hmm.
In 1833, Campbell donated 50 acres of land to develop a town, with 2 acres designated as the public square. The remaining lots were sold to new settlers, and Campbell began the organization of Greene County.
Mm-hmm.
The county was officially established on January 2nd, 1833, and named for Revolutionary War hero Nathaniel Greene.
Aha! Uh-huh.
And we have Nathaniel Greene Park, which is pretty nice.
I always knew that little factoid in the back of my head, but every time I hear it or I'm reminded of it, it's like, oh yeah. Like, I forget it. It's, you know, doesn't affect my day-to-day life, so why should I retain that information? I retain so many useless information, that one can skidoodle.
We haven't walked through the Japanese garden, have we?
Yeah.
Did we do?
Yeah. Keegan was...
Oh, yeah. With...
I think I had just graduated aesthetic school? Or was getting ready to... No, I had... It was after I graduated, because it was in, like, the spring after I graduated.
Anyways, yeah, they have a beautiful Japanese...
stroll garden.
Stroll garden, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was very nice.
They also have some old cabins and things where they do reenactments and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we carved our names
in a gazebo. Back when we first started, when we were little children starting to date.
13 years ago.
I was a child.
Almost 13 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep, when I was a child and you were a grown man. Shut up.
But Dennis says... cradle robber. Anyways.
No, I was 20 when you first asked me out. I forget that. I had already turned 20.
I was...
By the time you asked me out.
I was not 20.
No,
I was...
7.
27-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
You turned 28 the year we started dating.
Anyways. By 1835, approximately 500 people resided in Springfield, which was then incorporated in 1838.
Yay.
In 1838, the U.S. government forced the Cherokee people from their ancestral lands in Tennessee, Alabama, North Carolina, and Georgia. This tragic event, known as the Trail of Tears, resulted in the deaths of thousands of Cherokee people during the journey, and as a result of the relocation.
Yep.
Yeah. Pretty rough.
Yep, the stain on America that nobody wants to fucking talk about.
Nope.
And everybody wants to... Not everybody, but some people want to make horrible excuses for.
Yep. It's ridiculous. The Trail of Tears passed through the Springfield area along the Old Wire Road, which is now part of the Trail of Tears National Historic Trail Auto Tour.
Interesting, because, this is interesting. I see the signs along where the Trail of Tears, like when you're driving down the road,
right,
there's like little markers, Trail of Tears, whatever. I drove home tonight I went through Battlefield. I usually don't do that. I usually take Republic Road all the way home. I drove through Battlefield on Old Wire Road, which is like way south of where I see the Trail of Tears signs. So, like,
I don't know. I mean, they could have. I have no idea. Do they really know exactly the trail, Or do they...
That's my question. Like, is it that the old wire road that runs through Battlefield new? Like, is that the new old wire road? Or are the Trail of Tears markers in the wrong place?
Who knows?
Along more populated areas? I don't...
Probably.
Because I don't know. It wouldn't make sense. Because that's like a really... I don't want to say really secluded because people live there. It's like a neighborhood. Right. But it's Battlefield. Population, what, like 5,000?
I don't know. Anyways.
So it would make more sense to draw more attention to them. But also, it's just interesting. Like, this has no effect on anything. You know me. My brain just catches a trail and runs.
I mean, it could be like a wide area that it's a big trail, I guess. I don't know. Very sad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Today, visitors can follow this route along Interstate 44 and US 60 to learn more about this heartbreaking chapter in American history.
Yeah.
Springfield was divided in its sentiments as the Civil War... Springfield was divided in its sentiments as the Civil War loomed. The first major battle west of the Mississippi River occurred on August 10th, 1861, with U.S. God damn, I can't read. With Army units clashing near Wilson's Creek. The battle involved around 5,400 Union troops and 12,000 Confederates, resulting in the death of General Nathaniel Lyon, the first Union general to die in combat, and victory for the Confederates. The Union troops fell back to Lebanon, then Rolla, and regrouped before returning to Springfield, but the Confederates had already withdrawn. The battle led to increased military activity in Missouri and set the stage for the Battle of Pea Ridge in 1862.
I always like to remind people that technically Missouri was a neutral state during the Civil War, which that's not necessarily something to brag about either. Like, how can you be neutral about like, you know, some people want them to stay enslaved. Some people want them to be freed. Like, I don't really know. Yeah, flip a coin.
Yeah, that resulted in families fighting each other because they didn't agree. You know, this.
Yeah, which, I mean, like, look what's happening today.
Yeah.
Although, I feel like if the Civil War were happening in today's climate, the Springfield area would not so much be divided.
Yeah.
I mean, there would be factions against it.
Right.
But the majority, I think, would be fall along Confederate.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah. It's really frustrating.
Very sad. Anyways. The National Park Service recognized the battle's significance, and Wilson's Creek National Battlefield was designated in 1960.
Wow, long time.
Huh?
I said, wow, long time. But that makes sense. Like, that's about when Americana was a big thing.
Right. The battlefield, which spans 1,750 acres, remains largely unchanged and is considered one of the country's most historically pristine battle sites.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
I always think of Gettysburg when I think of, like, it is the most famous. It was the largest battle, right. But I don't know.
I don't know if they're saying, like, west of the Mississippi or what. I don't know.
Or just the fact that it's remained pretty, like you said, unchanged.
Yeah. Basically almost down the street.
Yep, drove through it today.
Yeah. After the Battle of Wilson's Creek, possession of the city was contested for 2 years. In January 1863, Confederate forces led by General John S. Marmaduke advanced toward the town square, resulting in a battle.
Springfield Town Square?
Yeah.
Oh.
We're talking about Springfield.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a battle.
I mean, you got to realize this wasn't populated with a bunch of houses and shit. It was still like...
No, No, but it was. They had a town square.
Yeah.
There were enough. I guess I didn't realize there was a battle in Springfield.
I guess so, yeah. I guess the main battle was down here in Battlefield, so.
Right.
At the Battlefield. Anyways.
You never hear about the Battle of Springfield, though.
Yeah.
Except for right now. Thank you. I'll let you talk.
As evening approached, the Confederates withdrew, and the next morning they left the town. General Marmaduke requested proper burials for Confederate casualties from the Union forces. The city remained under Union control until the end of the war.
Oh.
12 markers throughout the battleground in downtown Springfield commemorate various locations, such as where defenses were organized, troops gathered supplies, injured soldiers were hospitalized, and homes were burned.
What?
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen...
Well, we never pay attention to stuff
right,
like that.
Right, but there's... You know, there's art and shit to look at. Like, I never knew to look out for Civil War markers.
So, if anybody isn't in the Springfield area, just look out for these markers.
Next time we go downtown, we should.
Yeah, it says there are 12 markers throughout the battlefield in downtown Springfield.
Wow.
So, would that be the old square on C Street, or would that be the new square downtown?
I didn't know that there was an old square.
I thought the area C Street is the old square.
I didn't know that, though.
Actually, I might be able to get to that.
I thought the square was the square and C Street was C Street.
I don't know. Let us move on. I don't know. All right. In July 1865, the town square of Springfield saw a significant event in U.S. history, the nation's first recorded shootout between James Wild Bill Hickok and Davis Tutt over an unpaid debt.
Fun.
Yeah. Following a poker game at Lion House on South Street, Tutt took Hickok's pocket watch as collateral for the payment and promised to wear it publicly to demonstrate that Hickok hadn't settled his debts.
Hmm.
The next day, from a distance of 75 yards away, Tutt fired at Hickok, but his shot narrowly missed his head. In response, Hickok fired with staggering accuracy at Tutt's heart and killed him instantly.
Damn!
This battle became widely known across the nation due to the extraordinary precision displayed by Wild Bill, which was instrumental in gaining his reputation worldwide.
There's a reason you know Wild Bill's name and not Tutt's name.
That's right. Though Wild Bill was arrested, he was later acquitted of the murder.
I mean, self-defense, yeah. Right? And that the...
Pretty much, yeah.
The thing?
Because Tutt fired first, yeah. So... In 1870, the St. Louis-San Francisco line chose to construct its railroad through an area located north of Springfield instead of the city itself. This decision led to the establishment of a new town called North Springfield in 1871.
What?
With Commercial Street serving as its downtown area. That's what I was thinking about. Yeah.
So the Springfield Square is South Street and...
Right, yeah. Where Campbell Street and... No.
South Street, yeah. And... I can't think of the name of the streets that cross it, east to west.
South Street.
I can't Walnut? Remember. No.
Oh, yeah, Walnut Street.
Is it Walnut?
Yeah.
Because it's whatever Dublin's Pass is on.
I don't know. I think it's Walnut Street. Anyways. With Commercial Street serving as a downtown area, the city was also known by other names such as Northtown or Moon City. North Springfield's main street was Commercial Street, and its southern city limits were...
Park Central West and Park Central East.
Okay.
And then South Street turns into Boonville.
Yeah.
North. Okay. I was confused.
Anyways.
I don't spend a lot of time downtown.
Yeah. Anyways.
Sorry.
North Springfield's Main Street was Commercial Street, and its southern city limits were shared with Springfield at Division Street, which was named due to the division between the two cities.
Aha!
In 1887, Springfield and North Springfield held a vote to merge and become one city under the name Springfield.
Pawnee and Eagleton did the same thing.
Yeah.
Only they...
Parks and Rec reference.
They didn't share the same name after.
No. Anyways. The diversification of commerce and industry accompanied the arrival of the railroads, and after 17 years, the union of the two towns in 1887 strengthened the city of Springfield.
Yay.
Springfield experienced a surge in business, with over 150 establishments operating by 1878. Hershey.
He's had enough.
Hershey, our doggy's laying on our couch, and my laptop's on the couch, and he just stretched and almost knocked it on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, it earned the title of the Queen City of the Ozarks. By 1880, a woolen mill was producing 1,500 yards of cloth daily. Cotton mills were converting 1,000 bales of cotton into fabrics annually, and mills were grinding 200 barrels of flour per day.
Man, can we bring the textile industry back, please? Huh.
Yeah, we might need it.
A much more humanitarian and environmentally friendly way?
Yeah. Springfield was ahead of the game in 1887, becoming one of the first cities in the U.S. to have an electric trolley. The trolley network expanded rapidly, with lines reaching various areas of the town.
Excuse me, what? Springfield's public transportation is one of the worst in the country, but we were the first to have a public trolley?
Yeah.
Where the fuck is the trolley?
No longer there.
But, like, But, like, why? That would be so awesome.
I don't know. The trolley network expanded rapidly, with lines reaching various areas of the town. Riding the streetcar was not just a convenience, but a popular form of entertainment. The streetcar service was discontinued in 1937.
Jeez.
And there will be more history about Springfield, Missouri in our next episode.
Cool beans.
I didn't want to make this entire episode...
Just history.
Just history. So, all right. Now, let's relax and enjoy the night in the Walnut Street Inn.
Ooh.
The McCann Jewel House, now called the Walnut Street Inn, exudes the welcoming and delightful qualities of a Queen Anne Victorian residence.
Uh-huh.
With a rich historical background, this house has been owned by a lineage of noteworthy individuals. And basically, this history of this inn is all about the owners.
Interesting. Because
there were several. Springfield was ready.
Am I going to get mad, or is this going to just be okay?
It's a...
The way that you looked at me was like very pointed.
It's so. Just a long lineage of
okay. So.
Springfield was ready for growth in 1879, having reached the age of 50. Seeking their fortunes, young men were still moving west, including Charles McCann from Indiana, with his wife and two children. He quickly became involved in business and civil affairs, playing a significant role in the city's development. Wholesale trade was a crucial aspect of Springfield at the time, and McCann established the Springfield Grocery Company as a wholesale grocery firm.
Are they still?
Yes, they are.
I thought so.
McCann contributed to the... McCann contributed to the formation of the Springfield Club in 1886 and served as a director and president.
Springfield Club of what?
The Springfield Club later became the Chamber of Commerce.
Uh-huh.
He also invested in the Springfield Wagon Company, which eventually became one of the country's four largest wagon manufacturers. McCann was instrumental in securing the location of the Frisco Railroad shop in Springfield. He was also the main force behind raising funds for Springfield's first public library, which was built in 1905 and still stands at 397 East Central Street.
Wow.
Yeah. The Springfield Grocery Company is currently a significant employer in the Springfield area and serves the restaurant trade in a 180-mile radius that includes Kansas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Missouri.
Wow.
The Chamber of Commerce has over 2,000 member businesses, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. It's really cool. Sorry, I'm bitter about that. Sorry.
Why?
Because it's expensive to join the Chamber of Commerce.
Well, you got to pay your way.
And it doesn't, you don't get anything from it.
Do you not get your name out of it or like name thrown around?
No.
No.
No. I was a member of the NYXA Chamber of Commerce, remember?
Oh, yeah.
And I went to like the meetings and I was like, nobody ever talked to me. Except for the person who was the reason that I joined the Chamber of Commerce anyway. So I was like, well, if this is, I'm not going to fucking bother with Springfield. It's like twice the price. Well,
what you got to do is become rich and be a snobby bitch to them. So there you go. Anyways.
Good plan.
Yeah.
I'll get on that.
After his wife passed away, shortly after their move to Springfield, McCann married Catherine Ashworth in 1891. In his journal, he wrote that it had always seemed natural for him not to marry again, but he became interested in Ashworth and eventually asked her to be his wife.
Aww.
He described the sensation of starting anew when they married. Yeah. Anyways.
Okay, there's no journal excerpt that you're going to read from, right?
No, it just says he described the sensation of starting anew when they married. I don't know what he said.
Well, the way that you paused, he's going to read an excerpt from this man's journal. No, okay.
I wish. It would be cool. During the mid-1890s panic, when jobs were scarce, McCann built this house. Built his house. I don't know. Skilled craftsmen were eager for work, and good carpenters were paid only $2 a day.
That was a lot of money back then, though.
Yeah. McCann purchased top-quality lumber in carloads for $10 per 1,000 feet delivered.
It's like $10 a foot. Not anymore. Well, but.
And other items were bought at a similar cost. Despite this, the house cost almost $6,000.
Oh my god.
I wish that was today's money.
So I just gotta go find an ash tree, carve my name in it.
Yeah.
And then I can build a house for $6,000.
McCann incorporated the latest improvements except for electricity, which he later regretted. He utilized 20 iron Corinthian columns cast by Henry Hornsby, which gave the house a handsome appearance. Upon completion, it became one of the most attractive homes on the street.
It is beautiful.
While reading Charles McCann's autobiography, it was discovered that there was an exchange of ownership between the McCanns and Jules. Charles recalled that in February of 1904, W.A. Dennis approached him at the Springfield Club and asked if he wanted to sell his house located at 704 East Walnut Street. Now known as 900 East Walnut Street. When Charles said yes, W.A. Dennis asked how much he wanted for the property. Charles replied with $8,500, and W.A. Dennis agreed to the price. They agreed to the details, and Charles agreed to give him possession on May 1st, as he planned to move to a farm near Mountain Grove on that date.
Wow.
W.A. Dennis was to pay in cash. It was a quick sale, but unfortunately, W.A. Dennis never took possession as he passed away about a month after the sale.
Fuck!
That would suck. The property was then passed to his wife, who improved it and lived in it for a while. The Springfield newspaper was owned by Mr. and Mrs. Jewell, who acquired the home in 1917. Mr. Jewell was not only a newspaper businessman, but also the president of the Springfield Paper and Supply Company.
Wow. Can I just tell you? Mm-hmm. Just rough Google calculation. $8,500 in the early 1900s was the equivalent of $307,747.56 today.
Nice.
That's still a good... That house is worth way more than $300,000.
Oh, yeah, for
today's
real.
Money.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Anyway. Sorry.
I lost my spot.
I'm so sorry.
Additionally, Mr. Jewell created and owned the Jefferson Theater in Springfield, which was a well-known vaudeville house and the original location of the Grand Ole Opry. After Mrs. Joel.
Wait, the Grand Ole Opry?
That's what it says here.
Because I don't remember that when I did the history of the Grand Ole Opry.
I don't know. We'll have to look it up later. Not now.
Okay. No. Rabbit hole number 575.
Yeah. After Mrs. Joel passed away in 1940, the house was divided into two apartments. The upper apartment was designated for Mr. Jewell and included a private entrance, a kitchen, and a stairway, which is now the overnight guest entrance. The lower apartment became the home of Mr. Jewell's granddaughter, her husband, and their two sons.
Oh.
A wall was erected to separate the large reception room, our parlor, into an... Okay. A wall was erected to separate the large reception room... which is their parlor today, into an east and west section.
Mm. You were getting the history off of their website.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why I would say our parlor today.
Yeah. I forgot to change that part. And openings leading to the study were closed off, now the inn's office.
Mm-hmm.
The servant's bedroom, now the Wilder room, and the attic, now the Benton room, remained on the third floor. Mr. Jewell continued to reside in the home until he died in 1945. His grandson-in-law, Arch A. Watson, later became the president and publisher of the Springfield Newsleader and Press.
Wow.
Dr. Max and Barbara Rosen became the next owners of the house in 1953. They raised their five children in this home. During their first year of ownership, they removed the original three-story balconies on the south and added a deck. Dr. Rosen was a medical professional who practiced in the area. The Rosen family enjoyed traveling extensively despite their busy schedules. Their interests in reading, children, and travel were apparent throughout the house.
Their interest in children?
Hanging out with their kids. And
Their children. Okay. Not children and... They liked children. That sounds a little creepy.
Their children and grandchildren probably. I don't know. The property that would become the first bed and breakfast in Springfield was purchased by Gary, Nancy, and Carol Brown in 1987. They spent a year rehabilitating and constructing the house, which was then featured as the 1988 Springfield Symphony's Designers Showcase Home.
Interesting.
The Browns made significant structural improvements to the house, including rebuilding the south balconies and adding a metal spiral staircase.
Cool beans. I was thinking, why would you remove balconies to put in a fucking deck?
I don't
know. Like, you put in a deck under the balconies.
Yeah, I don't know.
Fuck.
The Walnut Street Inn welcomed its first guest in May 1988, with Carol managing the inn despite being only 19 years old at the time.
Damn, girl, get that bag.
Through their hard work, creativity, and marketing skills, the Browns were able to establish an inn that was recognized by Country Inns magazine as one of the top 12 inns in the country.
Nice!
Yeah. In July 1996, Walnut Street Inn was purchased by Gary, Paula, and Catherine Blankenship from the Browns. Yeah, they purchased it from the Browns.
Okay.
Gary and Paula who were originally from the Springfield area, left in 1981 and spent 15 years living in five major cities around the country. During this time, Gary traveled over 100 nights a year on business, and their daughter Catherine was born.
Wow.
They eventually decided to come back to the Ozarks, and the Browns passed on their family-operated business to the Blankenships with high regard.
Cool.
According to Nancy Brown, "We weren't looking to sell it, but it just seemed like a perfect match. The Blankenships had a deep appreciation for history and hospitality, even taught a workshop for aspiring innkeepers at Missouri State University."
Wow.
Following Gary's passing in 2019, Paula decided to pass the business to new owners. She currently resides in L.A. with her daughter Catherine, son-in-law, and newborn grandson.
Aww.
Mary Fawcett and her two sons, Andy and Chuck Fawcett, became the new owners of Walnut Street Inn on April 15th, 2021. The family has been running the popular local restaurant Bambino's Cafe for several years. When the Blankenships decided to sell the inn, the Fawcetts saw it as a prime opportunity to explore new ventures. Mary's granddaughter, Madeline, is responsible for managing the inn, while other family members also contribute to the upkeep of the beautiful property. Welcome to the Walnut Street Inn, where the Fawcett family and their attentive staff are excited to offer you a serene urban oasis. We invite you to unwind and create your own cherished memories that will become a part of the inn's rich history.
Neat.
And that is the history of the Walnut Street Inn. So,
I didn't know that the family that runs Bambino's was the new owners of
Walnut Street. I didn't know that either.
Fascinating.
Cool. Yeah. And now for the hauntings. Back in 1998, a theater group touring Springfield was staging Fiddler on the Roof at a local theater. One of the actors who was lodged at the Walnut Street Inn went back to his room to rest between shows. He had the lights turned off and dimmed, and was lying down when he noticed a woman sitting at a table playing cards in the corner of the room. It startled him a bit, and he told the woman that the room belonged to him. The woman vanished, and the actor hurried down the kitchen to speak to Paula Blankenship, one of the then owners, about what he had just witnessed. The actor was scared and nervous and described the woman as middle-aged, wearing Victorian-era clothes, and with her hair up. During their anniversary trip in the fall of 1999, a couple stayed in the McCann room, which is adjacent to the Rosen room. One morning, the man got dressed in front of a full-length mirror in the bathroom. The mirror was attached to a cabinet door and was slightly open. While looking into the mirror, he saw a woman standing in Victorian clothes with her hair up in the bedroom reflection.
Wow.
When he turned to the bedroom, he saw no one. However, when he looked back in the mirror, guess what?
She was still there?
She was still there. The man alerted his wife and they went to inform the owner downstairs. A woman once stayed alone in the Maschino room. Yeah, M-A-S-C-H-I-N-O.
Maschino.
Yeah. In the Maschino room, located above the garage and the inn's carriage house. She couldn't fall asleep and stayed up late reading. At around 2 a.m., she turned off the lights and tried to sleep. However, before closing her eyes, she noticed a mist of fog near the skylight of the room. She closed her eyes and ignored it, trying to rationalize it as her imagination. Suddenly, she felt and heard someone pulling back the covers and sitting behind her and to her left.
No.
She convinced herself that it was just a dream, but when she opened her eyes, she saw a woman sitting on her bed.
No.
The woman was dressed in a Victorian dress and had her hair up. Same ghost. So, the stranger looked at her and she screamed for help, causing the woman to vanish. Terrified, the woman turned on all the lights and the TV in the room and sat awake until the sun came up. The next morning, she asked if anyone had ever seen ghosts in the inn and retold her story.
Wow.
Before sharing their experiences with the owners or staff, none of the individuals were aware of each other's sightings. Furthermore, some staff members have reported incidents of doors shutting and lights turning on without anyone present. Additionally, there have been reports of nighttime footsteps in the hallways.
Mm-hmm.
If you stayed at the Walnut Street Inn, would it make you afraid-ish?
Yeah, don't get in bed with me. That's my number one rule. I don't want to see you standing over me. And I definitely don't want you getting in bed with me.
Hmm. That would be... I mean, she wasn't, you know, trying to hurt anybody.
Don't get in bed with me. Boundaries.
Yeah, it's true.
Boundaries. Don't get in bed. If you're not my husband or my kids, don't get in bed with me. Or my dog or my cat. Don't get in bed with me.
Anyways, I hope everybody liked this episode. It's a lot of history about Springfield, which I will have more of in our next episode.
And hopefully I won't throw a wrench between every sentence.
Yeah. That's fine.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of fluff the episode.
Is that what I am? I'm your fluffer.
You're my fluffer. Your mother fluffer. Anyways.
Oh, thanks. Do you know what a fluffer is?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do.
You just kind of glossed over that one.
I didn't want to say, you know, because I know exactly what it is.
Okay. It was just so unlike you to just gloss over that.
If anybody's a fan of porn, they know what a fluffer is. Anyways, let's get out of here.
You don't have to be a fan.
If you've... Oh, my God. I think it's bedtime.
I think Paul's finally had enough to drink.
Yep, I've had four or five drinks.
Jesus Christ! Yeah. I went to a bar and I haven't even had that many drinks.
I've had a few. So, anything else?
No.
All right.
I'm gonna go to bed.
All right. If you have any stories or requests of anything you want to hear about or know anyone who does, please email me at afraidishpodcast@gmail.com, Instagram and Facebook at afraidishpodcast. The website is still down because I don't have time. All the links will be in the show notes. I do have this on YouTube as audio, but not video right now.
Yes, but you do get to look at lovely pictures.
Yeah, for the most part.
For the most part. There's lots of podcasts that do that format on YouTube.
I don't listen to them on YouTube, so I don't know. You can listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and almost anywhere you listen to podcasts. Also, rate and review on Apple Podcasts and rate on Spotify. 5 stars, please. And
even if you hated me.
Well.
5 stars.
Anyways. Until next time, don't be afraid of the dark.
Be afraid-ish
of what's in it. Bye.
Bye.